Chick. We're listening to the Number to Three Movie Podcast. This week we will be discussing The Crazies with Christian Milinski.
I'm not right, am I?
We also have with us, with hopefully an awesome tagline this week, Kelly Wand. Do you have a tagline for us, Kelly Wand?
"'Tis more comfortable to be mad and not know it than to be sane and have one's doubts."
I think that's a line from Shutter Island, yeah?
I know. I had to do back-to-back crazy lines, week to week.
Did you recognize that music, Kelly Wand?
Dazed and Confused? It's still playing, I notice.
It's not now. Do you guys not know what that was?
Is it Godspeed, You Black Emperor?
Very good. It's the 28 Days Later soundtrack. Danny Boyle used that for, and it's become zombie music, that sort of industrial building crescendo noise grunge music stuff that was a little bit in evidence in The Crazies, I thought.
And now it's just boilerplate zombie music for everything.
But it works. It's great zombie music, I think.
It's The Crazies of zombie music.
So Kelly Wand, before we start, by the way, I'm so glad that Jeff Bridges was nominated for his performance in this movie. Even though I don't like country music.
Yeah.
Thanks for stealing my joke.
Kelly Wand, why don't you give us a plot synopsis before we start so everybody knows what they're in for? Why don't you explain to us what happens in The Crazies?
Okay, so this plane crashes and releases a toxin in the water, and they turn off the water instantly, but it doesn't matter for some reason. And some people are immune for some reason, but you never find out why, and they have to escape the army. And some turn into zombies because they drank the water.
Okay, good. That works for me. Kelly Wand, would you characterize The Crazies as dark?
Darkly lit. And dark on a scale of dark to light, with light being fun to watch.
So, Dingus, you were the one who I think probably had the most reasonable expectations going into The Crazies. what was it like actually seeing this movie?
What do you mean I had the most reasonable expectations? I knew nothing.
You knew it was going to suck?
No, I didn't know anything. I don't know what you mean.
Well, Kelly Wand and I were just so excited.
Yeah.
I see.
I got fooled again.
Was that a crazy? Were you replicating the sound that a crazy makes? What was that?
That was actually a CSI audio.
Oh, that was your Roger Daltrey impression.
Oh, I see. We all get sound effects now. Thanks, James Cameron. I didn't bring a date. I didn't realize we were all going to do this. All right.
So, Dingus, because I think it's pretty clear that Kelly Wand and I are pretty depressed right about now. How are you feeling, Dingus?
Delighted.
It tapped into my fear of car washes.
Oh, wow. Car wash terror. That was awesome.
Now, have you guys seen Final Destination? Go ahead.
I was going to say that, too. That also taps into car wash fears.
That's a popular theme these days.
Yeah, and in the movies, I notice with car wash scenes, like, the car can never get out of it, even though every car wash I've been to, you drive into the car wash.
But something grabs your wheels and moves you through the car wash. It taps into your fear. You can't, because there's water and rotating brushes all around.
Have you ever tried
a car wash? Not since the 80s.
Not the movie.
It was the 80s. Was that Mitt Romney? What am I thinking of?
So I want to say, I just want to say, first of all, I was right about this being a remake. I want to just throw that down and say to both of you, especially Kelly Wand, I told you so. However, I didn't realize it was a remake of what it was a remake of. I thought it was a remake of something else. And what I want to talk about during this podcast is the ways that The Crazies is not as good as a 1984 movie called Impulse that I thought this was a remake of.
I was going to say it's not as good as Cronenberg's 1975 classic Shivers, a.k.a. They Came From Within, which I think has a similar theme.
Is there a porn star in that movie?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And she's naked. It's a great movie. Watch that instead of this. But Impulse is okay.
Impulse is great. I am now, having seen Crazies, I am willing, and I rewatched Impulse. I'm going to go to bat and say Impulse is a great movie, and Crazies reinforced for me why Impulse is so good.
It was the District 9 to Impulse's Avatard. Wait, the other way around.
Yeah, the other way around.
Uh-huh.
Did you guys see the original Crazies directed by George Romero that this actually is a remake of?
Well, that's what I was. That's why you guys are totally confusing me. You're just making up what it's a remake of. So, okay, I say it's a remake of 28 Weeks Later.
Okay, so Romero, after doing Night of the Living Dead, his next movie, I think, was The Crazies. It was, again, he just shot it in, is it Pittsburgh? Where's he from? He just shot it out in Pennsylvania, wherever he lives. Apparently, you know, another low-budget kind of production. And then he moved on from that and went back to bona fide zombie movies. I think in the 1973 Romero movie, it was another toxic waste kind of deal. So then in 1984, there was a movie that I had seen as a kid that made quite an impression on me called Impulse. Impulse has Meg Tilly and Tim Matheson, and I'll tell you some more cool details about Impulse later. And so when I first saw the beginning of the trailer for The Crazies, because I'll watch the first scene, and then once I realize what it's a trailer for, if I know it's something I want to see, I'll stop watching. So as I was watching the beginning of the trailer for The Crazies, and once I realized what we were in for, you know, it shows the guy coming out on the baseball field with a shotgun, and Timothy Olyphant stops him, and then it shows, I think, Radha Mitchell diagnosing a guy who doesn't feel well, and his family's worried about him. And at that point, I was like, oh, this looks like a remake of Impulse, where the small town goes crazy. And at that point, I went into a self-imposed blackout, information blackout about The Crazies. Knew nothing about it until I saw it. Afterwards, realized, I looked up and realized it was a remake of the Romero movie and not of Impulse. So that's where my confusion comes from, Dingus.
Was that really worth going that far for?
Going what far for?
Just that you thought it was something else from watching part of a trailer and then didn't.
Well, it was, because Dingus was wanting to know about, I was explaining to Dingus my confusion about it. And so what this led to was me, before going to see The Crazies, re-renting Impulse. Hmm. Which
I remember there's a crazy sex scene in Impulse, am I right? With Meg Tilly?
So Impulse is very much the same thing. Impulse, for a few reasons, is a way, way better than Crazies. And the script for Impulse is written by Ilya Kazan's son, Nicholas Kazan, who did also the script for Reversal of Fortune, which is the adaptation of that Alan Dershowitz novel about Klaus von Bart. No, what's the guy's name?
Klaus von Sydow.
And he also did the script for At Close Range, which I believe Kelly Wan mentioned.
Yeah. Exactly. The best parenting movie we've ever seen.
Yeah.
And as you alluded, Kelly Wand, Impulse, so the idea isn't just a virus that turns people into zombies. The idea is that it is a toxin that takes away people's inhibitions.
Restraints, right.
And they even at one point, there's a couple of scenes where they touch on a little bit of scientific mumbo jumbo about it. They don't go too far with this, but at one point they compare it to Tourette's syndrome. So part of what it does and part of what you see is the movie is people get violent, but also there's some weird stuff about sexuality in the movie that is really uncomfortable. So Tim Matheson, who is our hero in Impulse, not to put too fine a point on it, but he sodomizes an underage girl before basically raping his own wife. And Bill Paxton is in it, by the way. And it's, at one point we find out that he has incestuous leanings towards his sister. And we don't know if that was because of the toxin or if the toxin just somehow frees him up to express it. So there's
That was Pacino.
I don't know what that's a reference to. But no, Bill Paxton is
Scarface. Never mind.
One of the things that Impulse does is it's not just a virus that turns people into zombies. There's this whole – and it ramps up much more slowly. So Impulse also starts with a picture of the small town, and we got this in The Crazies, where you see how idyllic small towns are. And early on in Impulse, before any characters have been introduced, it shows the small town. Then it shows animals starting to go a little crazy. Like a dog starts rolling around on the lawn, and a bird is flying around in its cage going crazy. And then it shows a concrete slab out in the jungle. And the animals are going crazy because an earthquake is coming. So a little earthquake shakes the town, and some dishes fall off of people's walls, and the window in front of the barber shop cracks. And then the earthquake is gone, and it's passed, and it's no big deal, and all the people in the town are kind of excited. But then there's a scene of this concrete slab, and there's a crack through it, and some black stuff is oozing out of it. And then that's the setup for Impulse.
So it's black.
Normal view.
And so it ramps up much more slowly. You know, the first thing we get in the crazies is the guy charging out with the shotgun on the baseball team. But in Impulse, I think one of the first things is the couple comes in from out of town rather than already living there, which helps tell the story. An old man comes up to their car and just takes a leak on it. A dude walks up and pees on their car. And people do weird things like that. There's a scene in a bank where a lady reaches across the counter and steals money out of the till when the teller isn't looking. Weird little things like that happen, and they escalate to somebody being locked in a house and these little kids try to burn her to death, which we get early on in the crazies. The crazies just jumps right to the crazy.
So this kind of explains Bad Lieutenant for me, now that you talked about that guy going up to the car and peeing on it.
Okay, there's a point of continuity there, sure. I'll buy
so
that.
So just based on what you just said, Impulse sounds like it has way more science in it than the crazies offers. Because I didn't know what... There's not enough about the crazies and the crazies.
Impulse doesn't have that much science in it. What happens is you don't know, it's following the people who've come in from out of town, and you don't know what's making the townspeople do this. But every now and then, there's a shot of Meg Tilly's family. She goes back to see her family because her mom has committed suicide or tried to commit suicide after calling her and calling her a slut and a whore and just for no reason that she can understand cussing her out and then shooting herself in the head. That's like the first super crazy thing. So her family works at a dairy farm. So every now and then we get these lingering shots of the equipment in the dairy farm. And later on, Tim Matheson discovers that the toxin has dripped into their milk. And the way that the people were infected is by drinking milk. They even test the water in Impulse, which is similar to crazies. You know, you would think that's where you would get the crazy. That's where you would get the disease. But in Impulse, it comes through milk. Which I love the symbolism of that. This idea that something wholesome and American is what poisons people. And Meg Tilly doesn't drink milk, by the way. She doesn't drink the milk, so she doesn't get poisoned.
Mm. But in the crazies, even though he turns off the water, it doesn't matter, and they all get crazy.
And there's also that weird thing where they look to see, like, there's a progression depending on where you live. It takes a certain amount of time for the...
And then they say at one point, oh, it's airborne, and then they still don't get it. Like, why are they immune? Why is Timothy Olyphant immune to it?
Well, the airborne thing is just something that Babcock has been told, that the soldier's been told. That's not necessarily true.
Right.
Why is he immune to it?
Because it hasn't gotten to them yet.
He got to Russell, and he was with them the whole time.
But he even says he lived upstream. Like, he even says, I lived closer to the source than you did. By stint of geography, they do not catch the crazies.
Mm. Okay.
One thing I really liked, but I don't – let me just say, I don't have any of the baggage that you guys have going into this. I haven't seen – any of the films you guys have talked about. I'm really not familiar with the original Crazies or Impulse or any of these other films other than 28 Weeks Later, which I mentioned. And I didn't really even think of this as a zombie film until I told people I'd seen it last night, and they were like, oh, I hear that's a zombie film. But one thing I liked about him turning off the water is that you know that there's going to be a fire, and that I thought that was going to play into it.
That's good.
Oh, he's turned off the water after that mayor that we never see again told him not to the guy with the cool swimming pool. And, oh, no, that's going to mean that they can't put out the fire, but nothing ever happens.
No, there's no payoff. We never see the mayor go crazy, which would have been fun.
And you never see any repercussions to him turning off the water. It was just this great little dramatic moment, and I thought, oh, the town's going to burn down because he turned off the water, but nah.
What was your favorite dumb thing in the movie?
The crotch-seeking surgical power saw.
Yeah. Which he can't kick away. He needs to.
Yeah. He has to hold his legs open.
Yeah, and just stare at it, even though he's been fending off this thing. And I hate how this dude cuts away from the shot where it actually kills the guy welding it. Like, you don't see that shot. So you have to, like, parse it from later shots where it already is cutting him open.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, the direction was just incompetent, I thought.
Oh, it's horrible.
Yeah.
And the score sucked, too. Like, the score was tipping every scene off and making everything. Like, that scene where they shoot Scotty and the mom, like, the music goes da-da-da-da, boom, just for the second shot, so you know it's coming even more than they're doing it. I hate this movie.
So I identified a couple of, the movie was just so unimaginative, too. And there were a couple of, everybody knows what a cat scare is, where, you know, the people are creeping around and the monster's going to get them and something jumps out and no, it's just the cat. So there were a couple of these tropes that I identified. There were no fewer than three of what I call the friendly hand scare.
Yeah. And the last one of which, that means he's in the meat locker that whole time while she's hiding in there and the dude comes by. And he's there too, but he doesn't...
Right.
That's not even that the last one, though. There's one even after that. There's
where she reaches down to him. Yes. Like,
oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah.
And the music's like, whoom!
Yeah.
So the other one, there were at least two of these. There's the, and I don't really have a punchy title for this one, but I'm sure you guys will recognize it. There's the, I'm peeking through the keyhole. Oh, God, there's something there!
Yeah. And it's an eye. It's yeah. Oh, you never see that. You never see the eye through the keyhole. We didn't see that on Lost. Yeah, thanks, James Cameron. The whole movie was like that. And I feel like such a fool, sorry about that, for looking forward to this from the trailer, which gave away every competent scene. Which is like the first 5 minutes.
The trailer does bring together some cool-looking stuff, so I can understand that.
It was all bait, wasn't it?
I didn't see the trailer, so I didn't know that. I mean, the my favorite things were the constant wait here. That was one of my favorite things.
Oh, yeah, and they separate constantly. He leaves his pregnant wife alone, and
But there was never any justification for leaving the person who got left. Starts with, wait here, Nicholas. I'm going to go out and stand in front of the thresher machine for 10 minutes while it could run me over.
Yeah. And then she gets suspicious once she sees he's not in the driver's seat. Wait, that's crazy.
And then the sheriff, Sheriff Oliphant, does the same thing to his wife, wait here. And then, you know, he goes out to his barn. We have that same. And then he leaps her outside the truck stop for no reason. Just wait here. I'm going to go inside this well-lighted, safe area with all this water. You stay out here in the dark parking lot.
You know, it really is. It's the latter-day version of the let's split up, you know, and you can't really say that. Yeah. So instead of let's split up, wait here is kind of as if there's a reason they need to wait there. You know, maybe it's because the character thinks the other character is going to be safer there. But it's no different than just saying let's split up, which is so stupid.
But, you know... That's okay in sort of your standard horror film where I think you expect that if you justify it, but it was never justified. There was never any reason to leave that other character behind.
And they keep doing it.
And then the other thing I loved was the constant shooting somebody in the back in the nick of time thing, which I couldn't believe how many times they used.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah.
And it's always a reveal who the shooter was. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, he's going to kill me. Oh, he's shot. And who did it?
Yeah. And it was never once a surprise. It was always exactly who you figured it would be. And it was so he knew through the window, like, when to shoot that one chick, the mom.
Yeah.
And then there's a lot of the scenes where you're dying to know what was going on when the camera wasn't in the room. Like when the mom gets surprised and then she's just tied up by a zombie.
That's these crazies. They're so crazy.
It doesn't make a sound and she's not even gagged and she makes no sound.
They're so crazy. They'll take you prisoner to avenge their killed wives/dads. Yeah. That's crazy.
They have so much rope. They have a lot of rope.
Crazies carry rope. They're crazy, but they know enough that they can use some rope. So they tote a lot of rope around with them.
Oh, I thought they just had it. They had a lot of rope in the nursery. The crazy thing. That makes more sense to me.
So scenes ripped off from other movies. There was, of course, the car wash scene, which, by the way, if you haven't seen Final Destination 4, the car wash scene is a big fat red herring, which is so stupid. Two scenes that I thought of ripped off directly from Jaws.
Oh,
first
me too,
of all, the slapping the chief of police for his role in someone getting killed.
Oh,
you know, the bereaved wife or the bereaved mother. And then, of course, the mayor not refusing to inconvenience the community for financial reason.
Right.
That was very, very Jaws.
Because poisoned water won't hurt the community.
They have to water their crops.
I loved his pool, though. I love that scene. I love the way it looked. His pool just there on the edge of his farm with the farm equipment going on in the background. I love the visual of that.
Yeah.
And set up this great villain, and then you never see him again.
And as soon as he walks into the funeral home, I thought, Jaws slap. And you know, that's one of the reasons why Jaws is just such a smart movie, is that this scene needed far less dialogue and more people in it. And instead it had him walking in and her talking and talking and talking and talking and slapping him instead of just slapping him and having people see that.
Right.
And at first I was trying to think as I thought about this, it was like, well, we need this so that later scene pays off, but they give us all this dialogue in the later scene so that we know who those people are anyway. You just don't need any of that. I mean, if you're going to steal from a movie, then steal from it.
Yeah. And it's not, I don't know. I wanted more details about the crazies, like how the virus worked and how it made them crazy. And was it fatal? I mean, do you just stay, get stronger and just get more homicidal and greener?
Well, it really was not a rules-based movie, which was kind of, I mean, it needed to establish a couple of rules about how crazy does it make you. You know, obviously the movie didn't, we are giving this far more thought than the movie did, because apparently you can lie there almost dead in a cell, and as soon as the two cops get within reach, you go crazy and you're trying to grab them.
Which isn't a crazy thing to do, because if he'd gotten him, then he would have gotten out, and then he's not that crazy, is he?
Yeah, I mean, was he playing possum? I mean, and then there's the hunters too. So I presume they go crazy, and they're driving around hunting and loading up their pickup truck with corpses, but they've got the crazies, right? Obviously. So there were no rules about it. It just wanted to be a zombie movie and eat its cake too.
And the hero does nothing in that scene. That's the scene where he's passive when he has the hunters coming out, and then he just lets them slide, and we never see the hunters again.
Yeah, we do. There, it's
we
the
see
big
them
old
at
fight.
The end.
Yeah, they're the ones. They're the ones camped out in the truck stop.
Oh, I didn't recognize them because they were all crazied out.
Well, and it shows their pickup truck. And it shows their pickup truck full of bodies.
I thought that was like just like another group of hunters for some reason.
No,
like they'd all become crazy hunters.
I think the idea is that the craziness magnifies what you already are.
And that's, by the way, what is so good about Impulse.
Right.
Impulse really hits that.
And Shivers.
I saw Marilyn Chambers. Is that her name?
Yeah.
I saw that a long time ago. And it's another virus movie, Kelly Wand?
Yeah, and it does the same thing where it lowers your inhibitions and it makes you kind of sexually crazy. And
that's very Cronenberg.
Yeah.
I hear someone Googling.
Click, 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 click.
Click, 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 click.
So also this movie quickly went to, and this is where I realized, oh, this isn't a straight-up remake of Impulse. It quickly went to a full-blown government response, which here's one of the things I did like about the movie. This particular incident, you know, the government is ready for this stuff. By the way, the name Trixie is taken directly from George Romero's original stuff, which I kind of like that. This stuff, the government was ready. You know, they institute this containment program, and we know that because we get the satellite view or whatever.
It's a containment protocol, by the way.
Protocol, exactly. Much better. Much more governmental. And it would have worked if it wasn't for the
meddling fire department.
If it wasn't for the fire department and the Second Amendment.
Good point. There's a scene in the original Crazies where a crazy has sex with his crazy daughter. And there's also a subplot about a doctor trying to make a vaccine, but some crazies run him down in a stairwell and they break all his test tubes.
Ah.
So that's what the remake gave up.
They didn't feel we needed those. All right.
But
see,
crazy sex scene. And am I wrong about the Meg Tilly thing in Impulse? Isn't sure. Am I thinking of Body Snatchers?
No. There's a so. And by the way, Meg Tilly in Impulse, I'd forgotten. I'm so used to seeing Jennifer Tilly being all crazy, and not crazy is crazy, but just wacky, I guess. Meg Tilly is beautiful, and she's so delicate and understated, and I forgot how really good she is. I don't know why her sister became the really famous one. Yeah, but she's really good in Impulse. She's got this very delicate China doll quality about her. So what happens is after, so Tim Matheson has drunk the milk and he does get the sickness, and he sodomizes the young girl, and then he basically attacks his wife, and there's a sex scene between the two of them that is very uncomfortable and weird because you know that he is sick. And at the end, he sacrifices himself to save her. Like it has a sort of a cool payoff. But one of the things, so I can't watch it also without thinking of him in Animal House, which kind of ruins it for me because he's supposed to be the hero who ends up getting sick and the whole self-sacrifice. But he becomes really tough. Like he's a nice guy being brought to the girlfriend's. Part of the subtext of Impulse is being brought to meet your girlfriend's family and friends and how unnerving that can be. And when they all turn out to be sick and infected with a neurotoxin, that makes it even weirder.
Yeah. So
there's that subtext. But what happens is as he gets sick, he becomes really tough. And this is a 1984 movie. To represent him being tough, he puts on a jean jacket with the sleeves cut off. Which looks ridiculous, and it's so 80s, and it's Tim Matheson from Animal House, and
that's what the toxin does to him.
Yeah.
Does John Carpenter do the score?
One of the problems with Impulse is it's very the director's claim to fame was Alien Nation. So this guy doesn't want to do a whole lot.
Movie or the series?
The movie.
Oh.
So one of the problems with Impulse is it has a very straightforward, perfunctory, made-for-TV presentation, and that includes the music. But still, so in The Crazies, we immediately go to the government being implicated in this. This is a government operation. They've got their containment protocol. One of the really cool things that I love that they do in Impulse is they don't say whether or not it's the government. You see a vehicle lurking around town, and it's maybe olive drab, it could be tan, it's just an SUV, and the only marking on it is a stencil that says for official business only, or for official use only. And then later on, you hear this guy calling in, he hires an airplane to spray the town with toxin, but there's no like government, and he's communicating with some sort of base and other people. And there's a showdown between him and the husband, and then Meg Tilly gets involved. But there's never, you don't know if it's a corporation or the government or some private agency. So it retains this mystery kind of, that where it is in The Crazies, it's just evil government once again.
And everybody has to have a black Suburban. I just wish for once the government would get wise and use like a panel van or some sort of a nondescript vehicle. And not
something more eco-friendly.
Yeah, a Prius. A bunch of guys in a Prius. That would be awesome.
A sinister Prius. A black Prius. The color of evil. On top.
I do want to say one thing I really liked about this film, and it's something that I usually hate in almost any television show or movie. I think it's almost always used incorrectly, and that's the 2 days earlier tag. And I actually really liked it here. And I almost missed the first shot of this movie, which is the town burning, because I was late to the theater and I really wanted to get a cup of coffee because I saw it in the morning, but I decided not to. But I saw that first shot, and then we get 2 days earlier, and I started laughing because I thought, oh, okay, great. I had no idea what I was doing. I had no idea what the movie was other than that it was called The Crazies. I didn't know anybody who was in it or anything about it. And so it starts with this great image of the town burning and the banner going down, and then 2 days earlier. And what I like about that, which I normally don't like, is that we get through that first day, and I just have to think, in one day we have to get to that. How are we going to get to that one day?
Because nothing happens the first day except the one dude at the baseball field. That's the whole
day
right there. So I thought that too. I'm like, oh, this is going to be a great day.
I know. How are we going to get there in one day? And so I kind of like that. I like that it got us. That worked for me. And I also like the shift because
then you didn't get to see anything happen after that. It's like you see the one guy with the thresher and the arson, but the rest of the town, you don't really see them go crazy.
No, you don't. But that was okay with me because of what was going on and because the image had already been planted in my head, I could imagine what was happening. And I didn't realize we were going to shift to a government thing. So when we have that weird satellite shot, I think it's right after they discover the plane. Something that had been sort of tugging at me is like, why is Timothy Oliphant in this movie? And then when I realized, oh, it's going to be – there's going to be black helicopters coming in at some point. Oh, okay, it's a bigger movie than I thought it was. Because at that up until that point, I just thought we were in for a goofy slasher film, and I couldn't figure out why Timothy Oliphant was in it.
Remember when Timothy Oliphant escaped on the side of the truck in front of Russell? He stopped seeing him.
Oh, by the way, I loved that guy, that Russell.
Yeah,
guy.
He was good. I quite liked him as well. Yeah.
Russell Clank.
I don't quite get what was going on with his disease that he could sort of decide not to be crazy for a little while.
That's but, again, it's just so sloppy with rules. I hate that.
Yeah.
You have no sense of and when when Timothy Oliphant stabs the mother with a knife that's sticking through his hand, and the blood is just flowing over his hand and into his wound, I thought, oh, was this? Does he get? Can you get? Right. Can you get the crazy from that? From the blood flowing into your wound as you knife this woman in the throat? No, I guess you can't.
Because the filmmakers didn't think about that. They didn't go that deep into their own ideas.
We only get it from drinking water. As long as he doesn't, you know, as long as he doesn't drink her blood.
So actually, her, he could probably her drinking all that water at the end, that was a red herring, right?
I wondered what, I think it's just, okay, let's show that Rhoda Mitchell is thirsty and she finally gets a drink.
It's just a chance to see that creepy guy back where the cooks would normally stand to see the face behind her. That's all just another sort of, oh, there's another guy behind her kind of a moment.
Yeah, the crazies do lurk a lot. There's a lot of they're patient for crazies. Yeah. They're very patient crazies.
Yeah, because how long did they wait in their house? the mother and the son waited in that house for a long ass time.
Yeah,
I mean, they
knew they were in that house, and then he goes, "Hey, look, it's that one who killed Dad or something." Like, yeah, well, that's why we're in the house, aren't we? They know which house they were in all that time.
Another thing I really like
that's just crazy.
Is I like how much Deputy Russell hates exposition, because the government guy starts to talk about and he just shoots him. It's like, hey, no, I'm done with the exposition. I would love that. I thought we're gonna have this long drawn out. This is what the conspiracy is about, and instead the guy just gets shot in the head.
Do you guys remember when Rhoda Mitchell was in good movies? Do y'all remember that?
No.
Yeah.
Which ones? Pitch Black something.
What was the Woody Allen one she was in? She was really good in, oh, good God. Dingus, what was the one where she was awesome?
She was in something else, but I do remember her in, crap, now I don't remember.
See, she's become quite the scream queen. So she was in this, she was in, and I actually kind of like the Silent Hill movie, but that's another, you know, just throwaway horror thing. She was in one of the lesser crocodile movies also.
Like Rogue. Placid?
No, Rogue, I think it was called, an Australian one. I forget who the dude was in that. It was she
was in PU 239.
That's right, very good. She was the wife.
In Pooh. She was Marina in Pooh.
Yep. Yeah, but she's good. I like her, and I and Timothy Oliphant too. I like him, and it's just a shame to see him doing this jump. So one of the things that I thought was going to happen, and again, this was fueled by me having watched Impulse recently, is I thought we got Timothy Oliphant because he can be sinister and threatening. So I thought he was going to get the crazy and become one of the bad guys like Tim Matheson in Impulse. But no, they just made him a generic hero.
Whenever you mention Tim Matheson, I just think of Fletch. I know you talked about.
Yeah, it's a weak point watching Impulse. I will admit.
Did you guys like Slither?
Not a big Troma fan. It stinks a little bit of Troma for me.
Slither?
Yeah. Slither? Isn't it Jamie Gunn, that Troma fellow?
I actually almost threw up during that movie. I actually threw up a little in my mouth during that movie. And I screamed like a little girl to the point where two high school girls sitting behind us started laughing at me.
What made you think of Slither, Kelly Wand? You got to have a segue, you know.
Because it's a small town that gets infected by stuff and only a couple of people survive.
And that's another disappointing thing is I love movies about the creepy small town or something going wrong in the small town. And, you know, it goes back to H.P. Lovecraft's Shadow over Innsmouth. You know, that idea of the outsider comes to the small town and there's something weird, there's something going on. I love subverting small town America. And this didn't love that as much as I did, this movie. But yeah, that was a good thing about Slither. That's a good call, Kelly Wand.
And you got a sense of the town in Slither. And in this, you kind of didn't. It didn't have a supporting cast. Yeah. Like everyone's out of the movie instantly, except me.
Well, that's true, actually. The Sheriff Oliphant is walking down Main Street going, hello, hello. And nobody's there. It's like it's the first time he's been walking down his main street. And this woman rides by on her bike singing a silly song, and he doesn't know
her. How come she doesn't try to kill him?
See, that's why I think you need an outsider in movies like this. It definitely helps if you have an outsider, where it's somebody who's not accustomed to the town.
That's a good point. That's a very good point. Yeah, I like that.
And Impulse did that, by the way.
That soldier Babcock could have been that. Although I like that scene a lot. I like the catch and release program.
You know what, Dingus? I'm with Kelly Wand in that I think it's dumb. If this soldier has been told we are containing a disease, you know, why this soldier wasn't doing his job? This soldier was stupid. He was an idiot. If he thinks, you know, if they're there to save people from this disease getting out, it's sort of like
what was accomplished in that?
It's sort of like Harold Perrineau in 28 Weeks Later. He does not want to help the kids. He's only there to – like he knows the stakes. He's a part of the military. The military knows what they have to do to contain this terrible thing. That should be a dilemma. And it shouldn't be like, oh, he just feels sorry for these good people who let him go, I think. So I'm with Kelly Wand. I hated that scene. I was like, you know what? Soldier, do your job. You know, you're a military guy.
And it would also make the story more dramatic too. It's like he does sell them out and then they have to get out of that. As it was, he just – I don't know. There was no point to any of it.
No, I thought it was goofy, but I really liked it because it's not what you normally see in that scene. And basically what the idea is, oh, he sees they're all okay, and they explain they're all okay, so what he's been told is not true. You know, he's been told that it's airborne, which is clearly a lie. They're not crazy, and they're not even close to crazy. And Timothy Oliphant says, if we don't let him go, we're dead. He doesn't say that exactly. And he forces Russell to give him the gun. And I love the tension in that scene and this weird sort of he has to go out. Of course, nothing ever – there's no payoff.
Right.
You never see Babcock again. There's no sense that he has second thoughts or that there's any repercussions whatsoever. It's like when what's-her-name decides not to attack the Na'vi. But –
Avatar'd.
Yeah, that's right. I brought it up. But I did like the sort of the internal logic of that little scene.
I think Babcock's an idiot. Babcock, I hope he gets fired. That's all I have to say. I hope there are repercussions. He's a terrible soldier, and it's just not good enough. If you're trying to contain a disease or an outbreak, you can't just feel sorry for a couple of people who aren't infected.
He also let himself get jumped too, so he's a shitty soldier just for like getting ambushed.
That's right.
By the people that are looking. He's an idiot. He deserves to die.
I have a question about the little credits button.
Okay. Oh, that's right, the little news report, right? Did you stay for that, Kelly Wand?
The one where it says bad news, something else dumb's happening. And then it goes on and then nothing. Is that the one? Was there one after that?
I wish you were.
That's how it was written in the script verbatim. But yeah, I did punch up.
I would watch CNN if Kelly Wand were on it. That would be awesome. in that last scene in where are they? Cedar Rapids? Where mm-hmm.
Right.
Where they're showing the newscast and the news station gets taken over because of the next initiate containment protocol moment. Does it show a soldier coming in or does it show a crazy on the camera.
I think it's crazy.
Okay. But that doesn't make any sense.
No.
Well, of course not. What did you expect after 90 minutes of what you had just seen, something to make sense?
Well, yeah, because the idea is that I think it's there's a nifty like last shot before the credits start where it's okay, because these two people have escaped, now we have to initiate the protocol.
Oh, the news is infected. Thanks for howling.
but they're clearly not infected. Right. So anything dealing with crazies is not going to be the issue. It's all going to be military now. And so I wasn't sure if I saw a crazy or if what I saw was a soldier and then some person going, ah.
No, I'm pretty sure you saw a crazy. And once again, you have given this movie more thought than Breck Eisner.
Yeah, so. Your ideas are really good, too. You should have been at one of these pitch meetings.
Is Breck Eisner the – Breck Eisner? Is he –
Breck Eisner is the director.
Is he Michael related? Eisner's illegitimate bastard? Ouch.
Is that what you were going to say, Dingus? Were you
going to ask if he was related to Michael. I was not going to use the word bastard.
I think he's the inventor of the shampoo, I believe.
Very nice.
I don't know. I remember looking up what he has done, and so far he has he had an undistinguished career, and he is continuing that trend.
Do you guys have any favorite lines from this movie?
Oh, that's a good one. I don't. Give us some good dialogue, Dingus. Do a scene for us.
I can give you my favorite line since I asked the question. I can answer it.
Good. Give us a line.
All right. First of all, it's shaking.
I have one.
Oh, go ahead, Kelly Wand.
This is really happening. It's going to be all right. We're going to be okay. You don't really believe that, do you?
Are you a doctor? my favorite line is, I hope you're right, Chief. I'm no world beater, but I got plans. And you can barely hear him say it, but it's Russell. And Oliphant is trying to tell him he's not sick. And he just does this great thing where he's like, hey, you know, I hope you're right, Chief. I'm no world beater, but I got plans.
Good. All right. That's actually a good one. Do you have a bad line that you liked?
Behind you.
Oh. 1, 2, 3, not only you and me, got 180 degrees and I'm caught in between, counting 1, 2, 3,
beat a part of free, getting down with three. All right, that's enough of the crazies.
Wait, what happens to the behind you guy? Seriously.
I'm sure he gets killed.
All right.
This week's 3x3 is mine, and what I've asked you to do, and I need to add a quick emendation to what I said last week, is I want you to fix three movies by recasting one of the parts. What inspired this was Cirque du Freak and how John C. Reilly was just really wrong for the role he was given. I don't think of Cirque du Freak as a movie that would fit this category because that was something I actually liked about Cirque du Freak. It made it very watchable. Hopefully, the movies that we've come up with are bettered by recasting one of the parts. If you recast the part of John C. Reilly in Cirque du Freak, it would become a much lesser movie. So I don't want to give the impression that it was terrible casting and it was fascinating. So what I've asked you guys to do this week, give me three movies where you fix them by recasting one of the parts. So let's see, I will go last. Kelly Wand, since you were introducing a 3x3 for next week, you start out for us. What do you got?
I kind of broke the list immediately because I recast two of the parts.
Okay, well, you can only recast one. That was clearly, you just recast one part. So you have to pick who you like best.
All right. Okay, for Dude, Where's My Car? Instead of Ashton Kutcher, I would replace him with Warren Beatty.
Okay.
And Jack Nicholson for Sean William Scott.
Hey!
Oh, okay, just Warren Beatty.
So did you not like that? Because I actually thought that the casting sort of worked in that movie. I quite like both of those guys now. I mean, although I've seen them in terrible things. I think you've made the movie worse.
With Warren Beatty and Jack Nicholson?
Yeah.
Everything else is the same. Like, is Mary Lynn Raskjub still in it?
You're an Ishtar apologist, though. So.
Oh yeah, totally. Okay, yeah, actually, okay. Warren Beatty and Dustin Hoffman in Dude, Where's My Car?
Yeah, I don't think you fixed that movie. I mean, that's fine if that's what you want to go with, but I think the movie's fine.
The kids are going to flock to that movie.
Yeah, well, you suck in adults, too.
Kelly Wand, have you ever seen, and I keep screwing up this guy's name,
Sean Patrick Henry William.
No, seriously, what is his name? And I like the guy now. William Sean Scott.
Sean William Scott.
Oh, good Lord.
Three first names in a row is a lot.
Yeah. It's all I'm saying. I've seen him in things that I really like him in. I think that guy.
I liked him in Mr. Woodcock.
I loved him in Southland Hills.
In Southland Hills, especially, yeah. In Southland Hills, in Mr. Woodcock,
But I do hate Ashton Kutcher, and I can't believe you bitches are butterfly effect apologists. It just blows my mind every time I think.
So I'm going to go out on a limb here. Ashton Kutcher was in something, and I cannot remember the name of it. Maybe one of you guys could Google it. With who's the woman married to David Kelly? What's Michelle Pfeiffer?
Michelle Pfeiffer, Google.
David Kelly's wife, you know. There's a December May romance with Ashton Kutcher and Michelle Pfeiffer, and I can't remember the name of it, where he's actually kind of good. He plays Yeah, I know.
How'd you even see that?
I see all kinds of crappy stuff. He plays a wrestler.
Theology major.
He plays a wrestler who.
It doesn't sound gay enough yet.
Anyway, I think he has it in him to be good, but I also saw him in a terrible, horrible movie about Los Angeles called Spread, directed by a Scottish guy named David McKenzie, who did Young Adam, which is this wonderfully morally bankrupt story with it would be like if Jim Thompson was from the Midlands in England. So this guy did this movie called Young Adam with Ewan McGregor and Peter Mullen and Tilda Swinton, and then he does this thing called Spread with Ashton Kutcher, basically playing a male gigolo in Los Angeles that was just insufferable. But I've liked Ashton Kutcher, and I like William Sean Scott Penn, so I object, Kelly Wand, strongly to what you've done to Dude, Where's My Car?
So you hate Warren Beatty and Jack Nicholson?
Sustained. I sustained Tom's objection.
Yeah, sorry, Kelly Wand. You got to go back to the drawing board.
All right,
Dingus, what do you got for number three?
All right, mine actually relates to Kelly Wand's, because Kelly Wand recast Ashton Kutcher, who was in a television show called That 70s Show, I believe.
Oh, I know what you're going to do, and I'm with you. I thought about this when I meant to do it. Very good, Dingus, if you're going where I think you're going.
And Kelly Wand and I were talking while you were resolving some technical issues, and he almost ruined it. So
can I predict? I don't want to do it. I mean, here, I'm going to write it down, and after you say it, I'm going to seal it in this envelope, and I'm going to hand it to Kelly Wand. So after you say it, we'll see if I'm right. Okay, so
you can go ahead and guess. What film am I going to fix?
Are you going to fix Mila Kunis in Book of Eli?
I am going to fix Mila Kunis in the Book of Eli. And Tom, who am I going to fix? Who am I going to recast?
Mia Wasikowska?
No, but that's not bad. Kelly Wand, do you know?
The chick from Fish Tank?
Katie Jarvis, exactly.
Oh, that's way better than – I was just saying that because of the Alice in Wonderland movie. That's awesome, Dingus.
Yeah, I got pretty excited when this popped into my head. And,
see, I didn't ruin that.
What'd you say?
Nothing. I didn't ruin it, though.
No, you didn't ruin it at all, but you almost spoiled it when we were talking, and I thought I had a little gem, and you're like, you were sort of tossing it off, like, what if you did that? And I'm like, Kelly, shut up! Okay, let me just be very careful here. I'm not going to spoil anything about the Book of Eli. I'm not going to say anything about it, but just imagining Katie Jarvis in Solara's final shot. That's all I'm going to say. Mm-hmm. And just imagining Katie Jarvis looking at Eli in the think about it room scene. And I think Katie Jarvis has more, and I don't know how to say her name, but Anne Paralloud, how do you say it?
I don't know.
The woman who was in Nikita, La Femme Nikita. She's got more of that sort of offbeat toughness, which I and also a little bit more sort of like she can look a little bit more like she's been living in this world, I believe. Yeah. And I don't think she has to do anything with her accent. I think she can do whatever she wants. And I think that that would fix Book of Eli, at least go a long way toward fixing it.
Yep, very good. And that's the sort of thing, too, Dingus, where I get so excited discovering a movie like Fish Tank at the prospect of what sort of career Katie Jarvis has ahead of her. That's awesome. Well done.
Right. And you had asked, I think one of you had asked, do you think she can do anything else? Do you think she'll have a career? And then when I was thinking about this, it suddenly popped in my head. Oh yeah, she can do a lot of different things.
Very good. All right. Well, my number three, this is sort of a, I'm half serious when I say this, but I have a longstanding thing where I think that you can recast any role with Daniel Day-Lewis and the movie will be better. And I don't think there's a single role you can think of. This movie that I'm thinking of originally cast Daniel Day-Lewis. He dropped out of the project, someone replaced him, and the movie stinks as a result. And it's the Steven Soderbergh Solaris, where George Clooney plays a psychologist grieving over the loss of his wife, who gets flown out to a space station to investigate some weird goings-on, and they relate to people's sense of loss and grief. And Clooney's just way too lightweight for it. And I think he did it because he's Steven Soderbergh's buddy. But I'm imagining how that movie would have played out with someone with the intensity of Daniel Day-Lewis anchoring it and really giving it the emotion that it needs. So I haven't read the novel. It's based on this fantastic Polish science fiction writer named Stanisław Lem. He wrote the novel, and then there's the Tarkovsky movie, I think. I've never seen either of those. So I only know the crappy Steven Soderbergh movie, and I only know how much it's missing by not having Daniel Day-Lewis in the role that he was originally cast in.
That movie put me to sleep, and I thought it was intentional. Like, I really thought he wants me to be sleeping right now because it's so purple and the music is so languid.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you get any of that? Was that just Clooney?
I think Clooney's he's a soporific.
Yeah.
I actually, in thinking of these, I came up with a lot of, there are very few parts, maybe O Brother, Where Art Thou, and Three Kings.
Yeah, the
there are very
got
few
it.
Parts where I think probably somebody else should have been doing George Clooney's part. I love the guy, and he gets movies made because he's such a box office draw, but I don't think he's that solid an anchor for a lot of the movies.
As opposed to Ashton Kutcher, whom you adore.
So there you go. And you guys know that. Maybe you guys know this, that Daniel Day-Lewis was originally cast to play Aragorn in the Lord of the Rings movie. Now, I love Viggo Mortensen in that movie, in those three movies. So don't get me wrong. But can you imagine what that would have been like?
Awesome. No, wait. There was that other guy was...
Oh, you know what? You're right. Where did I get this idea that... Daniel Day-Lewis should have been originally cast. Stuart Townsend. Where did
Stuart Townsend,
Daniel Day-Lewis?
Yeah.
You know what? Maybe that's just I've been running with this joke for so long that I've convinced myself of facts. Daniel Day-Lewis
was the original
Harrison Indiana Jones. That's right. And then Tom Selleck replaced him.
Yeah.
Or Harrison Ford came on board.
But Magnum's teeth wouldn't let him go.
Did I really just invent that? Daniel Day-Lewis was never up for Aragorn. Is that true?
Well, if it's true, I never heard of it. I know that Stuart Townsend was actually in the part and I think shooting it, and they replaced him.
Huh. All right. Well, I'm glad about that part. I don't know. About
like Eric Stoltz for Michael J. Fox and Back to the Future.
That's right. Yeah. How about that?
And Brad Pitt Hugh Jackman for Brad Pitt in The Fountain. What do you think about that, Tom? Or would you rather have had Ashton Kutcher in The Fountain?
you're a vindictive little man, Kelly Wand.
Dude. Ashton Kutcher is the new Avatar. That's all I gotta say.
You see this movie with Michelle Pfeiffer, where he's not doing his goofball Ashton Kutcher thing. Then we can talk.
All right, romantic comedy genre. Straight man.
All right, Kelly Wand, what is your number two? Fix another movie for me by recasting one of the parts.
All right, this is the only one I did correctly. Cary Grant for Stephen Lack as the main character in Scanners.
Who is Stephen Lack?
The main guy, Cameron, in Scanners. Good guy. Picture Cary Grant as that guy, and then Scanners is totally fixed.
What's the main guy's name?
Cameron.
No. What the actor's name?
Stephen Lack, appropriately.
And does he really drag down scanners?
He's just all wrong. I just think if Cary Grant was like making people's heads explode and like veins were popping out of his wrist, it would be 10 times better.
Now, doesn't he have to do a sort of a stare-off battle with Michael Ironside
right.
at the end
See,
of the movie?
Cary Grant versus Michael Ironsides?
I like
Isn't that way better.
I
fight.
Does that make scanners totally A-?
Now, when did Cary Grant die? Would he have been alive, or are you just doing some time travel, like Star Trek stuff here?
Yeah, it's a Star Trek 4.
Well, you know, I sort of alluded to this. I asked, are there any rules? So
I didn't even follow the number rule.
Okay. I actually like that, Kelly Wan. That's a delightful.
Just have to use your imagination. If you have to watch scanners, but in every scene, pretend it's Cary Grant instead of that guy.
Good.
You're welcome, movie viewers.
I like that a lot because I really wanted to do some time traveling too, and I ended up not doing it, but I really like that.
All right. Dingus, what is your number two? Fix a movie for us by recasting one of the parts.
All right. I'm going to fix the film King Kong.
You jerk.
Which
okay,
one?
Well, so Dingus, you're stealing one of mine, but I guarantee that my fix is better than yours. That's all I have to say.
All right, let's hear how. Okay, we're fixing the part.
Well, I'm
going
to get to mine when I get to mine. You do your stupid one first, you jerk.
Got you there. You are a jerk.
Yes, I agree that I'm a jerk. Yeah. We can stipulate to that.
Wah.
So yeah, so we both hate Jack Black. We think he really screws up the movie quite a bit.
From A to Z, I mean, soup to nuts, he's awful in this. And I actually like Jack Black in some things, but I watched a few scenes of this. It's just unwatchable what he's doing. It's horrible. And I tried to keep as an idea for this, you know, Tom said fix the film. I tried to sort of feel like, is it a film worth fixing? And I don't know that King Kong is a film I really care about. But I really, really care about Naomi Watts in it. Mm-hmm. She was one of my favorite performances that year. I loved her. And this is nothing against, I think, Reese Witherspoon won for Walk the Line, a film I didn't care for, but I really liked her. But I think this was my favorite female performance that year. I just loved what Naomi Watts did. She's just luminous. She's amazing. And because of that alone, I thought she deserves somebody against her in that first scene that can handle or give as good as she's giving. And to say nothing of and this is a callback to an earlier 3x3 of how he ruins the last line of the scene. He ruins a lot of things in this movie. I could give you numerous lines, but I'm not going to bother. So, how would I recast it? I have
Michael Douglas.
I would not do Michael Douglas, nor would I recast. I have a guy I wish for and a guy that I would settle for if the studio won't give me him.
You got to pick one.
Oh, crap. I really like my other choice. All right. Well, my obvious choice would be Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Nerd alert.
That was the first thing I thought of too, Dingus. Because, you know, I think obviously what Peter Jackson is doing is he's imagining himself in that part as right. The schlubby guy who's an auteur who is misunderstood by the studio. So I was thinking who would do a better part of that, and I thought of Philip Seymour Hoffman too.
But that's not who you went with.
It's not, no, not at all.
Oh, good.
And where I kind of went from that, I mean, I think there are reasons Philip Seymour Hoffman might be a little too oily. And then not enough of a showman. I think there needs to be some of that. Another one I entertained was, and maybe this was because I was thinking of Philip Seymour Hoffman. It's the other actor who played Capote. His name is, Toby Jones. Toby Jones, yes. But he, I don't think, has enough of the showman that it takes to play Carl Denham. So I didn't go. So anyway, this is your moment, Dingus. So Philip Seymour Hoffman you thought of.
No, that's my moment. So you
that
can,
is.
Yeah.
Okay. Orson Welles.
No, the hello.
Yep.
Hello.
Go ahead.
This is respectful silence here.
So Philip Seymour Hoffman is the one I thought of, but there's somebody I really want for it, and I don't know if the studio is going to approve him.
See, because that's the problem I had too, is the studio approving them. And I think the studio, Peter Jackson, if you sell him on your other idea, I think Peter Jackson could get it. So who would you have? So you went with Philip Seymour Hoffman for practical purposes, right?
Right.
And who would you have, if you didn't have to deal with those practical purposes, who would you have picked?
This is an actor I really, really love, and his name is Eddie Marsan.
Again, I think it's missing the sort of expansive. I love Eddie Marsan too. He might be like, yeah, he's missing that sort of expansive thing that I think Carl Denham needs.
Yeah, but I think he can do it. I don't know that he's had a chance to show that. And I think he shows a little bit of his explosive power in Happy Go Lucky. And I think he can do that expansiveness. I just have that feeling about him. And so I would love to see him do this.
Okay, well, I'm going to jump to my number one then. While we're talking King Kong, let's talk King Kong. I like that with Eddie Marsan. That's good. There's so many parts, too, where Eddie Marsan belongs there. That guy is fantastic. But the showman, Eddie Marsan could get the madness of it. Like Carl Denham dragging his camera around through on Skull Island. Like you've got to be a little crazy there. That right. has a little bit of a Fitzcarraldo or a Gare Wrath of God quality to it. And however, I think with that, you need a sense of an old time movie director like D.W. Griffiths, you know, somebody who just knows movies.
It's just Griffith, I think.
And him too. So what I would like to see, and this would change the dynamic of it, because one of the things you have going in King Kong, and one of the reasons I think King Kong should be rescued, is, as you said, because of Naomi Watts. And the movie takes so long. I'm watching it right now, by the way. You don't get
understandable.
Well, it's paused. You don't get to the scene with her and King Kong, which is the emotional anchor of the movie, until an hour and a half into that freaking thing.
Right.
So one of the things that I think should be set up is her relationship with the young hero, who is Adrian Brody in this movie. That's like her love relationship. And there's an allusion to her having a father figure earlier in the movie with an older actor. I think if Carl Denham is an older father figure, that you can create that there as well. So that King Kong replaces both a father figure and a husband figure. And so I think Carl Denham should be older. He should have that obsessive quality. He should seem like someone who like D.W. Griffith, who knows movies, like an old-time famous director. And he should be not Jack Black, but Werner Herzog himself.
Nice. Swish.
That's Swish. My number one. I would love to see Werner Herzog, first of all, saying that line, "Was Beauty Killed the Beast," in his German accent and everything. I love the historical position of having like a German guy at that time. You know, this is what, the 30s, I guess. And Werner Herzog is so capable of being like over the top and crazy, and he's funny. If you have not seen Incident at Loch Ness, it is the funniest thing Werner Herzog has ever done, and he doesn't even direct it. He's an actor in it. And I think of him being interviewed where he got shot with a bullet, you know, somebody you got, and he's just sort of explaining to the interviewer that it wasn't a serious bullet. Like the guy's crazy. And I love that about him. So I would like to see Werner Herzog as Carl Denham.
That's great. He can be a little dry, which I love about him, and might hurt this, but I really, that's a great idea.
And with Klaus Kinski as Adrian Brody.
Well, you know, if Spielberg can cast Francois Truffaut in Close Encounters, I think Peter Jackson should be able to turn to Werner Herzog.
I think Klaus Kinski will play Kong, actually.
All right, so that's my number one. Well, I'll just mention it briefly and get to my number one. But now we're going to
Well, it's funny. As you were talking about Showman, I suddenly started thinking about the guy who played Bronson, and I can't remember his name.
Oh, Tom – not Holland. Tom Holland is the guy in The Loop. Is it Tom Hardy? Tom Hardy.
Oh, you're right.
Oh, that would be a good one too, Dingus, yeah.
But Werner Herzog, nicely done.
Because it's a little wacky, isn't it?
Yeah, I like it.
So that's actually my number one. My number two, because it's my turn. So I was thinking of movies that we have talked about. Fixing one that we have seen for this podcast and haven't liked. And the one that I thought back to was Sherlock Holmes. And who I would like to see playing Sherlock Holmes. I think that's of course, a big part of that movie. Is who you get to be Sherlock Holmes. So What we need, of course, this guy, the studios wouldn't go for it. He's not a big enough box office draw. But for Sherlock Holmes, I think we need someone who can do a period piece. We need someone who has a bit of edge to him. We need someone who's got some rough and tumble. You know, if Sherlock Holmes is going to be a bare knuckle boxer, and I think he needs to be old enough to seem like a man with a history. And I only hit on this watching King Kong. I want to see Andy Serkis as Sherlock Holmes.
I thought you were going to say Sacha Baron Cohen.
Well, there's one of those. Isn't that Sacha Baron Cohen and Will Ferrell? There you go.
That's an interesting choice. I like it. Yeah. You have to think about it. Andy Serkis. He has that voice. He has a really gruff voice that we'd have to accommodate to make room for Sherlock Holmes's like precision.
And you could do it. Have you seen The Cottage, Kelly Wand?
Yeah, it's all right.
But he did, you know, in The Cottage.
Straight in it.
And that's a buddy picture. You could have that same dynamic that he's got with the guy in The Cottage with his Watson. He can do that.
Kelly, so you keep Jude Law.
Sure, yeah, I'm only recasting one of the parts. I was okay. I actually quite like Jude Law in Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, me too.
What were you going to say, Dings?
I was going to ask you if you'd ever seen a film called Longford.
Is that the one with Jewel? That Civil War movie? Or is it Richard Gere or something? No?
No. Not.
Then yeah, I've seen it. I love that movie.
All right, well, Andy Serkis is great in that.
So, Kelly Wand, what is your number one choice? Number one movie that you were fixing by recasting one of the parts?
Well, in honor of Cop Out, which opened this weekend, my number one choice is Tracy Morgan and Clint Eastwood for Gyllenhaal and Ledger in Brokeback Mountain. Oh, wait, I can only do one. All right, just Tracy Morgan and Jake Gyllenhaal.
Replacing Jake Gyllenhaal, not Heath Ledger, okay.
Yeah. I'd like to see Clint Eastwood and Tracy Morgan have gay sex in a Western.
How many times can you use the 1, 2, 3 sound effect?
Just pretend it's Tracy Morgan climbing into the tent with Clint Eastwood and saying the exact same thing, like breathing in his ear. Come on.
Somebody I was at dinner with last night told me that he thinks Tracy Morgan talks like somebody who's deaf trying to talk.
Ouch. Yeah.
Tough room. Mm. Racist. That's my number one Cop Out.
All right. Can we all do a scene from Cop Out right now? Mm. I will be William Sean Scott Penn. Mm. Dingus, I want you to be Tracy Morgan. And Kelly Wand, I want you to be Bruce Willis. We all seen the trailer? Can we do this right now? Mm-hmm. Okay, you ready? Here you go. I'm William Sean Scott Penn. Dingus, you're Tracy Morgan. Kelly Wand, you're Bruce Willis. Ready? Here we go. Knock, knock.
No. No, hell no. No, no. No, hell no. No. No.
Who's there?
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. Thank you.
And I feel like I was channeling Bruce Willis.
That was great. We should do a different movie scene every week, by the way.
God, we're terrific. Yeah, we should.
I really liked your interpretation of that, Kelly Wand. That was good. And Dingus, you were really on tonight.
Yeah. Good energy. A lot of zazz.
Let's do Birdie next week. Oh, wait.
All right, Dingus, what is your number one movie that you can fix by recasting one of the parts?
All right, I'll just give you the actor I'm going to recast and the actor I'm going to get rid of and the actor I'm going to recast, and you tell me what movie it is.
Okay.
The actor I'm getting rid of is named Warwick Davis, and the guy I'm going to recast him with is named Peter Mayhew.
Isn't Warwick Davis the midget imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus?
Leprechaun.
Oh, that's Troy Verner. No, Troy.
You love Troy Verner.
He's the best picture of midgets.
Wait, is Warwick Davis one of the midgets in Time Bandits?
Yeah.
I don't like this term you're using.
Is Warwick Davis even a midget, or am I thinking something else?
He played a character in the film Return of the Jedi.
So you would have
he was a, you're going to, right, I see what you're doing. I see what you're such a right. to the nerds. Yeah. Just like Kelly Wand with his best cybernetic implant. It's an AI that's gone rogue. Three by three.
Yeah.
Angus.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. I'm getting rid of the Ewoks and I'm casting Wookiees.
It's good. Tom's lame for not liking that.
To this day, almost three decades after seeing that,
movie still would have sucked, though, even with the Wookiees.
I don't care. It wouldn't have been ruined for me. And it was almost ruined for me by those silly teddy bears. I don't need teddy bears. I grew up watching these movies, and by the time Return of the Jedi came out, I was a teenager, and I didn't need any freaking teddy bears. Now, my son's five, and he thinks Ewoks are super cool, but he's five. And right. So I understand what George Lucas is doing, and I get all the
Ewok-sized.
I get the Jar Jar Binks stuff. I get the Jake Lloyd stuff now because of who he was going for. But for me, when I was that age, I did not want to see a bunch of teddy bears. So if they had landed on a planet or moon full of Wookiees, that would have been fine with me.
Yeah. Well, the reason that they didn't is because apparently the Ewoks or the Wookiees were set up as technologically advanced, and he needed like a primitive culture to beat the stormtroopers.
Uh-huh. Like Avatar.
So he cared about continuity at that point in the Star Wars saga. That's how far back we have to go.
I don't mean this to discredit your choice, Dingus, but I am so over the Star Wars movies.
Everyone is.
Yeah,
I understand that, but I'm not because they still mean a great deal to me. But that has to do a lot with my relationship with my father, which this is not what this 3x3 is about. So to fix Return of the Jedi, I would you said I could only do one, but I'm going to change
the entire species
and put the Wookiees in there.
See, I only changed two, so that makes you a bigger corrupter of this topic.
Yeah, Dingus, you have now the movie that you have just made, Dingus, has one Wookiee with
all the Ewoks.
That's right.
That's fixing the movie for you?
That's going to look even goofier.
I don't care. Can you imagine how he'd be outfitted?
So Peter Mayhew plays two parts in the movie, as cast by you. He plays
Chewbacca. Because that's right. Or you just took Chewbacca. He's already in the movie, Dingus.
He also doesn't fit in his costume, so you see his arms hanging out.
Dingus just did a Dead Ringers.
Dingus didn't change the costume.
It's now you got the same actor playing two parts.
You're weird, Dingus. You just ruined the Star Wars trilogy. How's that feel? How's your father feel about you now?
I did a Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. So how's that? Where one guy plays all of the Oompa Loompas.
So like in Dead Ringers, would Peter Mayhew have like weird gynecological tools in Return of the Jedi?
One, two, three.
All right, well, that's it. That's because my number one, you already ruined that. You've ruined your own number one and my number one, Dingus. I hope you're happy.
I feel so good.
It's like a ruination party.
I feel like I could rule the universe as father and me.
You mean ruin the universe.
Wow, all right.
So Kelly, very disappointed, I think, in our
choice. No. There were some really good ones. The Scanners one was awesome. The Book of Eli one was very good.
I had an Easter egg later. Spoiler.
Does it have to do with Ashton Kutcher?
No.
All right.
Do you want to do your runners-up, Kelly Wong? Do you want to tell us who else you were thinking of?
Mine's an Easter egg. I can't do it yet.
Oh, all right.
I thought a lot of them, like...
Jake Lloyd, Haley Joel Osment.
Well, child actors was a big topic for this. Like, I kept thinking of...
That kid from The Mist was good. That little kid, Babel in The Mist.
Well, I was trying to think who would be a good... super young kid to replace the poor guy in The Road.
Max Records, I mean.
Oh, wait. Max Records in The Road.
But you want somebody younger.
Yeah, I do want someone actually younger. Good point. But the thing is, by the time they're that age, you know, they're not that age for very long. You can get maybe one, two movies out of them tops, and then it's an awkward thing like the Macaulay Culkin kids, whatever.
Hey, what was the movie where Damon Wayans played a baby? Because he could have been the kid in The Road.
Yeah, okay. That's one approach you can take. You're a CG kid. And I just, you know, I kept wanting to drop Cameron Bright in various roles.
I did actually think of him for The Road, but again, he doesn't solve the age problem.
I wanted to swap him with the horrible child actor who plays Paul Walker's son in Running Scared. because in that there are two kids in that, one of whom is Cameron Bright, but he would take him out of the part he's already in, and I wouldn't want to do that.
Oh, you know what I thought Cameron Bright for? I thought him for the Edward Furlong part in Terminator 2.
Ah, good. But he would have been – I don't even think he was born yet. You'd have to borrow Kelly Wand's time machine after he brought Cary Grant forward to be in Scanners.
Well, I gave you the opportunity to tell us not to do that.
No, you could have done that. It's if you can sleep at night after you've done that, you know, it's between you and your own conscience.
I also thought of replacing Julia Roberts in Duplicity.
Ah, yes. I thought of replacing Jennifer Aniston in every single romantic comedy she's been in.
I thought of replacing Julia Roberts with Richard Gere in Pretty Woman.
I probably would have put Naomi Watts in there, but she was on my mind.
Yeah.
As who?
In Duplicity, because I think she would have had some chemistry with Clive Owen.
Yeah.
Aniston. What are you going to do?
Aniston and Clive Owen were in that silly train movie. I can't remember the name of that.
Aniston and Warwick Davis were in that awesome Leprechaun movie.
Oh, Warwick Davis. He is the Leprechaun. That's why I know his name. Oh, so it's not. I didn't realize. And that's the guy from the Ewoks. So the Ewok went on to become the Leprechaun. Holy cats. Wow.
Kevin Bacon. Have you guys seen Jack Uhlenhaley as Fred Krueger yet, by the way?
They show so little of him in the trailers. I mean, the trailers are totally all about the stupid kids who are going to get murdered, unfortunately.
Michael Bay can do no wrong.
So, Kelly Wand, what do you got for us next week? Does it have something to do with Jackie Earle Haley?
All right, if you guys don't like this topic, I'm going to smell it immediately, and then I'm going to change topics. So be careful how you react.
You can't do that.
I can't?
Once you lay it out there, Kelly Wand, it's locked in.
Three movies for which there can be no forgiveness. Tom's dead silent.
No, I'm typing.
Carefully silent.
There. It's now recorded. Three movies for which there can be no forgiveness. That sounds like a tagline on a movie poster.
Yeah, it really does.
I hate it.
Okay. Do you need to elaborate or forgiveness for what? Because I know Dingus is just going to name Return of the Jedi already. I can tell you now.
Boring.
Yeah.
Do you think Ashton Kutcher would have made a better Han Solo?
So here's another thing. I don't think anyone except, and I'm serious about this. You're probably not going to believe me, and I've argued this before, and I'm not joking. I don't think anyone except Peter Cushing in Star Wars is very good as an actor.
Oh, I don't think so either, but I don't think you can replace them.
No, right. They're all personalities, and they all are sort of rammed into our heads when we were kids. But
James Earl Jones is good.
Watching it now, I think the only performance that really feels comfortable and not kind of out of sorts and a little ill at ease, the only person is Peter Cushing. And I think of, you know, Harrison Ford doing the scene with Greedo, picking at the stucco on the wall. I think he's not that good in Star Wars. Some of them sink into their parts better than others, and Harrison Ford, I think, gets pretty good. But
Alec Guinness sucks.
I know.
Who's that guy?
He's there for the paycheck.
What a hack.
He's not – Alec Guinness, I think his last movie was some horror film shot in Russia called something like Mute Witness or something. And so this guy shot this horror film in Russia, and at one point Alec Guinness – he found out, I think, I'm totally going to butcher this story, but he found out Alec Guinness was in town, and he persuaded him, Alec Guinness, to let him run the camera while Alec Guinness was on the way to the airport, and he got him to roll the window down. So he's got one shot in this horror movie called, I think it is Mute Witness, of Alec Guinness rolling the window down on a limousine that he puts at the end of the movie to make Alec Guinness seem like he's in it as the main villain.
It's the villain.
Yeah, it's the villain. It's a horror movie about, I think they're like snuff films or something they're making. And it's got a cool twist. The heroine is deaf and mute. So she can't talk. She can't hear. And she gets involved, you know, with this. It's like a slasher film kind of. And at the very end, you find out that the main villain is, I think they might even call him Mr. Big or something stupid like that. And it's a shot of Alec Guinness on the way to the airport. So that's one movie where he actually phoned it in more than he did in Star Wars. If you thought he was bad in Star Wars, see him in this Mute Witness.
That's like Henry Fonda in The Swarm. And Tentacles.
Ah, that's right. Yeah, he did a couple. It seems like he did a couple of good days of work on Tentacles, I think. That phone scene, you know, they probably had to shoot that a few times to get that right.
Okay, Henry Fonda is Neo.
It's a different twist. Okay, got a Cocoon vibe to it. Okay. All right, so next week, three movies for which there can be no forgiveness.
And the movie that we're seeing, you have to tell people.
So next week we will see Alice in Wonderland. Kelly, you are particularly excited about this because you've loved Tim Burton's recent movies. I think you especially like that.
I heard there's a shot at the end of Ashton Kutcher driving to the airport, too. he's actually the Mad Hatter. I hope it's not a spoiler.
I would be on board with that. Now, Dingus and I are very excited about it because we've seen the lead actress in an HBO series called In Treatment. She is fantastic. So I don't care how bad the movie is. I'm just looking forward to seeing this girl finally, I guess, hit
it. Being a bad movie?
Yeah, maybe. So join us next week for that. And for our three movies for which there can be no forgiveness. I am Tom Chick, and I'm here with Christian Miakowski.
Yeah, that's right. You can call me Mia. My name is Christian Mia Morosky.
And Kelly Wand.
Oh, they're crazies. Thanks, Breckeiser. Also, Robert Mitchum as Brundlefly.